Hi, I'm Alexis Dion.
And I'm Chelsea.
And we're the co-hosts of High Priority, a podcast where we ask industry experts the tough questions about the past, present, and future of the cannabis industry. And we're back with another high-powered episode of your favorite podcast, High Priority. Chelsea, I'm really excited about today's episode because we're talking about cannabis in New Jersey, which is, you know, our neighbor as New Yorkers. New Jersey legalized rec use of marijuana last February. And now, obviously, people are, you know, jumping at the chance to open up their own businesses, whether it's plant touching or non-plant touching. And so we have a cool guest today who's on the non-plant touching side. I'm really excited to dive into that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it'll be interesting just to hear his origin story, because it's like he kind of started this business straight out of college. So first of all, how do you even do that? And then second of all, just as a non-plant touching operator, he kind of has to wait around for New Jersey to like open up the applications for him. So this waiting game is probably very stressful. And I just want to know what he's up to in the interim.
No, seriously. I'm kind of just like looking through these stats. Shout out to our wonderful producer, Ryan Shepherd, for passing these stats along. But just going through for specifically New Jersey, I saw that New Jersey legislators wrote into law a requirement that 30% of recreational marijuana licenses should be awarded to businesses owned by women, minorities, or disabled veterans. So I think that's pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. Would love to see that at 50%.
Good start.
But good start, I guess, mm-hmm. Right?
Right. Yeah.
For now.
It's the effort that counts. Some states don't give a shit at all. So they care, at least on paper.
There you go. So that's one interesting stat. Another stat that I saw is that New Jersey actually ranked fifth out of the 19 states on Leafly's 2021 Cannabis Equity Score report. Colorado was first, California second, Illinois third, and New York fourth.
Oh,
so not terrible, right?
New Jersey. Mm-hmm.
I'm like, all right, okay. And then I saw that as of last year, the New Jersey Cannabis Regulatory Commission, also known as the CRC, issued an additional 44 medical dispensary licenses. And only one, though, went to a Black business, which is called Woe Flow. That's kind of disheartening. Like 44 medical dispensary licenses, but only one went to a Black person. Like, come on, New Jersey, what's happening?
All right. Well, everyone go shop at Woe Flow.
There you go. Send all the business their way.
Yeah. Yeah. We love to pay it forward here on High Priority.
Yes. You gotta keep it moving. So it seems like New Jersey, you know, it's like they're making strides, but not enough. You know, like, how can we push this forward?
Yeah. So our guest today, Tyon Bryant, who is the founder and CEO of Roll Up Life. It's like a tech platform delivery service. You know, it's really like a hot space to be in right now. I think he had like the right idea way before like New Jersey legalized adult use and everything, because apparently like almost 80% of the municipalities in the state like opted out of cannabis businesses.
Wow.
I mean, like, sad, New but Jersey. Like, also kind of checks out. Yeah. So like, it actually is something, it's like a problem in California too. And like, it's a huge opportunity for delivery services to like supply that cannabis in a legal way. So hopefully that'll be his in. Of course, all the licensing details are up in the air, but really rooting for him.
I am too. I want this young brother to succeed, especially because the, you know, obviously a lot of these municipalities are opting out of cannabis in general. So he needs to basically get more love, right? We want him to succeed. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And there are just like so few like tech platforms, I think, in cannabis that are Black owned. So this is just already such a unique founder story, and hopefully will inspire, you know, more founders with like a tech background to jump in and use their skills to build out this market.
I agree. I'm really excited to hear more about Tyon's story. I want to hear more about Roll Up Life. So let's just jump in and let's talk to Tyon Bryant, founder of Roll Up Life. Welcome, Tyon. As one of the few Black founders in New Jersey's cannabis space and an early mover in the tech sector, can you give our listeners a brief overview of your background and where the idea of Roll Up Life came from?
So Roll Up Life, I got the idea back when I was in college, leaving college and coming back to the state of New Jersey. So I turned 21 my senior year of college and going to school on the West Coast at Boise State University. I was privy to the legal markets of Oregon, Washington, and California. So they weren't that far of a drive from our school. I was in a really rough place trying to figure out where my life was heading because I was no longer an athlete. You spent your whole life trying to figure out, trying to make it to the league or whatever. And it's just now you're just a student and what are you going to do? So my degree was in politics. So I was always really good at statistics and I always wanted to be a lawyer and stuff like that. So I always just followed the laws, especially cannabis laws, because, I'm really interested in that. It's a new industry. It's refreshing. I didn't think I was going to be on this side of the business when I first started looking into it, but that'll come down the line. But you're young, you're taking this long road trip, about 6-7 hours out to Oregon to go to a dispensary, and you get there and the line is even the next 2 hours, the next hour and a half. So now it's you're sitting there, you're subconsciously building a company in your head, yo, why is this line so long? What could I do about this? And then you get in the dispensary and it's I wonder how they're getting their products from A to B. I wonder what the streamline process of this looks like. Then I come back home. Before I get home, I understand that New Jersey had just passed the J. Koenig Act, which allowed for medical marijuana throughout the state. So you're putting the pieces together. You're I know over here medical is a precursor to recreational marijuana. Clearly they're about to do it in Jersey. So then I'm understanding the statistics of everything. Like I said, I was really caught up in the laws of everything, understanding that less than 4% of license holders are African-American, while 3.73% of African-Americans are more likely to be arrested for the same cannabis offense than white counterparts. You start looking at that, then it's just all right, well, this might really be something. But that's the professional answer. If we'd rather really tell y'all why I started Roll Up Life, I'm sitting in the car one day with my cousin and my trap phone just going boom, boom, boom. And I'm just yo, I need an app. it's a light went off in my head. And I looked at my cousin yo, I gotta go. I swear to God, I looked at my cousin I gotta go. So I go upstairs and I said, I was already privy to all of this stuff that was going on. But I go upstairs and start applying the research that I was looking up over on the West Coast to what they were doing in Jersey. And it was just yo, this is some unheard of shit. Do it. And just taking that one to my background in politics to make it easier to go out and network with people and talk about the business and talk about the background of what I'm trying to do and how I can do it and accomplish it legally. It led me down a really, really long rabbit hole of meeting the right people, joining the right organizations, getting learning from the right other groups, some educational platforms. And each step led to what you're seeing right now, which is Roll Up Life, which is our idea of Roll Up Life is to be the premier provider and transport of cannabis and related products. So yeah, that it's been such a journey, but I guess that's a brief overview of how I went from just a wide-eyed college kid to trying to start a business to actually having the business.
Yeah, that's so impressive. And since you started Roll Up Life in 2018, really as soon as you graduated from college, you mentioned you had that, politics, government degree. How were you able to teach yourself the ins and outs of cannabis supply chain operations? Probably something you did not study at all in college at that time, especially when the medical market in Jersey was just really taking off.
Yeah. So like I said, it started off with just joining I guess I was just always in the right room and they were all talking about the correct thing. So One of the people that I met very, very, very early on in my journey was Roz McCarthy, who's the CEO of Minorities for Medical Marijuana. And Roz McCarthy hosts these extremely detailed licensing boot camps that last a whole weekend, and you're in there for 8 hours for 3 days, right? So I was very fortunate to be in one of those cohorts. And in that cohort, it not only taught you how the supply chain of the cannabis industry worked, it taught you how what the actual plant was, what terpenes was, what cannabinoids were. It broke down marijuana itself before it even started to get you into the business side of it. So once we started to understand the plant, we also started to understand the businesses and then the ancillary services that came with it, right? So all of that jam-packed within this one weekend, and you're like you making sure you're keeping up notes. So as she's bringing on people who are active, who are already actively in the industry, cultivators, one of my favorite people that she brought on happened to become one of my advisors later down the line, but Hope Wiseman, who opened one of America's first Black-owned dispensaries down in Capitol Heights, Maryland, called Mary in Maine. And Hope was there just letting us know like what it was like at the time that she was going through it. So at this time, it's about 2017 or 18, like you said, and the industry's still really fresh. She's going through some troubles, and she's trying to help us to really get our mind on what's actually going on. And a key issue actually was the supply chain and how things could get caught up. So I set out trying to solve that problem, I guess, in the beginning, early on, because it was like no one really understood it. And trying to get a lot of these cannabis companies were, well, especially in Jersey, are all in one. So it's from one, you're just taking it from your grow side of the building to the dispensary side of the building. But as the market started to open, it's like, well, how are you going to go get your products to a smaller dispensary? What is this A to B side looking like? And how are you going to transport these products? Are there specific types of vehicles that go into this play, right? So these are all things that we're starting to question. And you look into the California industry because it's the only one that had like a functioning delivery industry at the time. And you're starting to see what they were going through, the problems that they went through, the solutions that other companies had. Then you mix that with, even with these solutions, what the customers saying about these solutions, right? And you try to take all of that and add that to your knowledge of the grow cycle, add that to your knowledge of the harvest cycle, add that to your knowledge of when manufacturers are completing their edibles, how many they're making a day. So you start understanding how, like I said, from the beginning of the business, you start understanding each rate and then how each thing adds to the supply chain. And then you start to understand like, all right, so this is what the cannabis supply chain looks like. It's not really like this well-oiled machine, how the clothing supply chain would look like, right? Where you could just go from manufacturer, UPS is going to handle it and everything's good. There's so much detail that goes into tracking. So once you get into learning the supply chain, you'll start learning about BioTrack. You'll start learning about Metric and how they assist into the supply chain. So all of that rabbit hole came from like those first couple years of just not trying to build the business, but learning what the cannabis, not just marijuana, well, not just the cannabis industry, but learning what the plant was. And then once you learn what the plant was, learning what the plant does, then learning what the plant does showed me how the businesses operated and how they intertwine with each other, creating the supply chain. So it was just a really long, like really long journey. Like it's almost like I feel like I went and got a bachelor's degree in marijuana from somewhere.
Essentially, you did a bachelor's degree that you earned just from real life experiences.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm glad you really talked in depth about this whole pre-planning process, because I think a lot of people who are trying to start a business don't fully understand how much education and research is involved. So I'm glad you talked about how much time you dedicated to really learning how every nuance works.
Right. I mean, it was the only way because, like I said, I didn't just want to do transportation and logistics, it was the one that my personality could handle. I didn't have to change myself to do this. Like, it was what I'm already good on a small scale of getting things from A to B. So like, if I was somebody that baked cookies, I wouldn't be trying to come out here and say, I want to be a cultivator. So that's another also, don't try to change yourself to the cannabis industry. Just be yourself inside the cannabis industry. And that's something that we were trying to do here at Roll Up Life.
That's great advice. Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. Follow your passions. If you have a particular passion, you can fit that somewhere within this industry. You kind of touched on how Minorities for Medical Marijuana helped you a lot starting out and how they connected you with Hope as a mentor. How did you go about like continuing to build out your mentor network? And were there any specific qualities you were looking for in a mentor?
Wow. That's probably the first time I've ever like been asked it from that perspective. Were there any specific qualities that I was looking for? How did I go about building my mentor network?
We come with the good questions here on Hop.
Yeah, that's a really good question. but realistically, if I can honestly say, I think the people in my mentor network, I think because I was so early to the party, they noticed how eager I was and started bringing me to the table. The only person outside of, I feel like Hope being in my life was like kind of like fate because of how like we ended up like speaking. She missed her train and I got like stuck with Hope for 3 hours.
Like, oh, wow.
So I got to ask Hope 3 hours of unfiltered questions until her next train came. So it was just like, it was kind of like,
nice.
And then again, like, so Roz led to Hope led to me meeting Siyun. I wouldn't say Siyun is a mentor or anything, but he was like, he's somebody that understands the industry. He's up in Massachusetts. So he's somebody that's really respected in the industry. Having conversations with him. I happened to randomly go to a High NY event and I met one of my favorite people in the world, Bobby Paley. Bobby Paley, if you Google her, she's they consider her the mother of cannabis investing. She's a really unique woman. I call her my silver fox. She is really straight to the point, very minority and women friendly and heavily connected throughout the New York industry. She tells you what it is straight up. If you need to clean something up, she's going, hey, that stinks, do it better. But meeting her introduced me to like the C-suite levels of everything. Like it made, I want to say like, that's what made me like feel like, oh, all right, nah, you're the CEO. You don't need to be down here talking this. These are the people you need to network with. And I guess the qualities that I was looking for in people on my advisory board was, one, people who are actively understanding that, yeah, we're still learning. We're still going to make mistakes. We were at this time, 2022, 23, right? So we're still young and learning. Someone who's very detailed, someone who doesn't mince words, who will tell you what it is straight up, because we're at a point in our life where you can't, you don't want to be just sold a dream, right? We want to be told what's real so we can go out there and execute everything that we try and get done. So I like people that's real hard on me personally. Like, I guess that's the former athlete in me. I like people that's not going to sugarcoat anything. I like somebody that's not going to tell me everything is going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I like somebody that tells me it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to feel overwhelmed sometimes, because that's when you're going to be your most creative and trying to figure out how to get yourself out your hole. So I look for people who are really genuine and open and honest as what's going on with them, what's going on with us, and building a relationship that you can build trust off of. So definitely people who have a very, very, very human quality to them, instead of trying to be Mr. or Mrs. Perfect all the time. So that's something definitely I look for in somebody that's in my mentor network.
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. And we ask this question because obviously startup life, founder life, can be very isolating. And I think the mentality of a lot of startup owners is like, I'll take whatever mentor I can get. But it seems like you have been very selective about your inner circle. And so that's why we felt like you had a pretty good gauge on like who you want on your team. And obviously that former athlete comes out. So hopefully that will guide a lot of other founders listening to this and, you know, help them in that way.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we know that Roll Up Life specializes in deliveries, but it's ultimately a tech platform. How did you build out like the tech infrastructure in this relatively uncharted territory in Jersey? And what would you say were the most important learning experiences during your first year of operating?
I looked at it like this. Like, so while cannabis delivery is pretty uncharted territory, logistics and wholesale is not. Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we have multiple companies that do the we're essentially doing in cannabis with food, with clothing, with this desk right here that we're talking on. So Amazon does this on a very big scale. Then you have companies like Lyft, Uber, Grubhub that does this on the food side. We aren't the first cannabis company to try to do this. You had a couple examples like Ease. When we first started developing this, Ease was out there. And then as we came along, you started to see others come aboard like Lantern. And there was always Weed Maps. So trying to figure out the best way to streamline all of that and make it efficient for delivery was something that we made sure was key in our innovative process to developing the Roll Up Life platform. So Samaj, who's our chief technology officer, is really good in iOS, Swift, Jira, and you know, not the brightest of the bunch with Android. We had a little bit of that outsourced, but in the process of learning this whole time of how to get this technology platform up and going and smooth, how we were trying to do it, you still had to deal with the barriers of it being a cannabis app and payment processing being a difficult thing. So the CBD portion of it was pretty relatively smooth to get up and going, because once you submit your COAs to the companies like Square, they'll allow you to like process your payments. So that part was relatively smooth. The biggest thing that we learned through that was that New Jersey is big. Everybody thinks that you're about to come out and service Jersey top to bottom, because you could drive Jersey top to bottom in 2 hours, right? But have you ever had 100 orders, right, in a 10-mile, and all of these orders within 10 minutes of each other? Just that took me all day, the first day, when it was just me, like, doing deliveries, right? Our first time actually being open. We had to shut down taking orders, right, the day before in an hour, because we didn't expect to get more than like 30 or 40 orders. We got like 100. Oh, so I was like, no, we got to shut this down. We can't keep this open all day, right? So we shut this down. I had to manually optimize the route. This was before we got like the technology backing for it and all of that, right? So you got to go in, you got all of these addresses. Now you're going from writing the address down to putting it in Google, right? I mean, to putting it in your maps to see how close is it to me. All right, how close is it to this one? Now, imagine doing that for 100 orders the night before, right? So
I don't envy you.
I'm stressed. I finally get these things in order. Precious is like, good luck. You know what I'm saying? Precious is like, good luck. Let me know how it goes. I leave out about 9 or 10 a.m. in the morning. Some people had scheduled windows, which made it a little bit better. Like, yeah, you come at 12, or I'll get off of work at 5. So that made it a little bit easier to try to schedule people around. Mm-hmm. But all in all, just driving Essex County, New Jersey, and I promise you, everything, if I was to just go to each one of these spots individually, they were no more than 10 minutes away from my house. It took me 8 hours. Oof.
That's a lot. And I'm guessing that's traffic as well.
You know, traffic, stopping and starting, getting out the car, getting to the customer, having them sign off. You know, they're gonna ask you a couple questions. So you try to, and then this is another thing about how you're learning how to this uncharted territory, because you got to get out there and experience yourself, right? You can't really just expect your research to go out there and help you out. You got to learn. Now I know I have an average delivery time, right? I didn't know nothing about average delivery time during research. That's not something that they're putting out there, right? Like you're researching these companies, they're not mapping that out for you. That you're not knowing that this is you're about to expect to spend this much time driving, and then expect to add a 3-minute window for your driver to wait, and then a 2-minute window for your driver to interact, right? Like this is stuff like you gotta learn and experience. So, the one thing I could say that was like the most important thing, the most important lesson that I learned in this first year operation is don't bite off more than you can chew. Grow.
That's a good one. I think that's applicable for a lot of areas of our lives as well.
Do not bite off more than you can chew. Just allow yourself to handle and manage what you can handle and manage. And then as you grow as a company, grow as a brand. Don't try to be like, oh, we're going to handle all New Jersey, and then you can't handle all New Jersey, then nobody wants to deal with you no more, right? So we got this. This is our corner, and we'll see you guys as we grow.
Gotcha. That makes total sense. I just wanted to quickly pivot a little bit. I know in previous interviews, you had talked about witnessing friends being impacted by unfair policing when they were young. How have those personal experiences influenced how you give back to the community?
Oh, deeply. Like I've been unfairly policed too. I'm not saying I was the most well-behaved child or anything like that, but just being from East Orange, New Jersey, I'm not trying to say it's like Chicago or anything, but East Orange, New Jersey, you know, cakewalk. And it's very unfair, some of the things that we're going through. A lot of people's background, a lot of people come from struggling homes themselves. So you got to add that and factor that into how they're handling themselves mentally. And a lot of that goes into why people are acting out, lashing out, or, you know, in some cases struggling to maintain a balance or try to find themselves. So it's being around that and being around people who are just, you know, used to being at the bottom of the barrel, used to being picked last in line, picked last in the game. It makes you just want to help out and like show them that you could be first sometimes. And that's definitely like just being from here makes me want to give as much to this city as I can.
No, I love that. I mean, it's really encouraging when you hear people who, even though they, you know, move up the ladder of success or whatnot, they still think about their community. They still think about the people who, you know, kind of helped them out when they were trying to get to where they are. So I'm glad that you touched on that. And also your work with expungement clinics often feature a number of corporate partners, including local MSOs and law firms. How does your team determine which companies to partner with, and what other ways can established cannabis companies work together to create greater social impact?
That's a great question. So first and foremost, I like that you emphasize that we work with local MSOs and law firms. We prefer you to be like either within our area or right around it, because that's where we can start seeing the direct impact. Right. So that's the first thing. Secondly, when choosing who those partners are, their work should speak for itself. Right. Especially in the cannabis industry right now, there aren't but 22, 23 dispensaries right in Jersey. And basically only about 12 companies that operate those 22, 23 dispensaries. And so with the knowledge of what there isn't but so many of you, you get to see what they're actually doing. Everybody says that they have all of these community impact plans and they're willing to give back to this cause and give back to that cause, but who's actually going out there and doing it? And with the select bunch that we just had working on this expungement clinic, they were able to not only meet our pre-qualifications to what we wanted the community partner to be, where if we're involving our company name with your name, are we going to be receiving backlash from anybody in the community? Is anybody going to be considered, oh, you're taking corporate money, that's selloutish, right? All of those things in the back of my head. But when you're working with companies who are actually putting their money where their mouth is and making the communities that they're actually partaking in or involving themselves in, and making it better, giving out scholarships, giving mm-hmm. out clothes in the winter because Jersey gets really cold. And you're starting to see what they're actually doing prior to you coming on board, prior to your ideas, right? Because a lot of these people would want to work with us because we're us and they just want to put their name on what I'm doing.
Right.
I don't need you for that. What are you already doing? And when you find somebody that's like-minded as you and already doing what they can in the community, like you said, someone like Jai, it's easy to want to co-mingle and co-attach your company with theirs to promote a better event that your entire that both of you guys benefit from, but not just you or us as companies, the city, the people around us, the community benefited the most from our last collaboration. That's when you know it's someone good to work with.
Nice.
And when the benefit isn't the benefit isn't only on us as companies, who benefits the most from that is the community, and that's the great community partner.
And I'm kind of curious because you mentioned that, you know, you've been approached before by people who just really don't have your best like interest in line or just not aligned in general. So I'm curious, do you find yourself having to turn down more like companies and individuals more so than you accept them?
I've turned down millions of dollars.
Okay, you didn't say thousands. You said millions of dollars.
Man of integrity.
Wow. Yeah, seriously, because I don't know if I... No, I'm just kidding. That's awesome, though.
I'm telling you, we lost one of our employees over that. Like, one of our first employees, when I not just, like, this deal doesn't make sense, they couldn't fathom it, right? So, you know what I mean? So, yeah, this if it doesn't make sense to me, I would walk away from it because I know what I got.
I mean, so let's say in an ideal world, New Jersey is actually able to process all these expungement requests in the next year and you guys don't have to host these clinics anymore. Again, ideal world. At that point, what other ways do you see Roll Up Life following through on its mission to help other people while helping yourselves?
Oh, we're already doing that. So, like, just think about it like this. So, if an ideal world took the expungements from us and we didn't have to do that, we get to do our second step. So, I just had a meeting yesterday with Governor Jim McGreevy about that. So, he's the head of the New Jersey Reentry Program right now. And right, that's what we're focusing now to get people from our expungement clinic back reentered into the taxpaying society, get them back in jobs. And not just jobs, their records affect housing and colleges and so much other things. So just trying to get them back into society as contributing members of society is what's next for us. So and also trying to that's why we did this with companies like Green Thumb, companies like the Apothecarium, because once they're clearing into the go, these companies also hire. So it's just like making sure that once they're good to go, oh, let's get this economy back started because our economy definitely needs a jump start. We need more people back working. We need more people, less people dependent on the government services. Like, while those are really good, I understand we're coming out of a really dire time. It's time to really get our economy back going now. It's time to, it's a lot of work out here. And granted, companies do need to pay more, too. I know that's a conversation for another day, but it's definitely time to try to get this economy back jumpstarting as much as we can.
Well, I mean, thank goodness for you, because you are employing people and, you know, helping people get back on their feet or whatnot. So you are a part of that ecosystem of you know, giving people opportunities. So we appreciate you for that. Roll Up is certainly always looking for new ways to pay it forward, as we've mentioned previously. Recently, you were selected by the New Jersey Cannabis Project, a social equity business incubator for New Jersey equity applicants, launched by delivery platform Lantern, who's also a Matteo client, to teach its first cohort on delivery operations. Can you give us a teaser of what you'll present on and given the most common mistakes you see in the industry?
Oh, I went already, but what I broke down for it was my job was to show what delivery was in this whole, and we tried to do our best to let them know, like, delivery isn't just you going in the car and dropping a product up. There's three different facets to it, right? There's a tech-based delivery, like your client Lantern. There's delivery services is the courier model, where you are just responsible for the last mile. And then you have the ice cream truck model of delivery, where you can hold your own inventory and go from your facility to a consumer. So there's just that little bit tidbit right there seemed to have wowed you a little bit, right? But so just a little bit of details of just like before you even get started. And this is why I'm going to come back and emphasize what I said in the beginning. Before you get started and try to run a business, you have to know what it is. What is delivery? Like, I want you to be able to tell me the definition of delivery and then tell me the definition of cannabis delivery, right? You need to know exactly what it is first and then go into, all right, so what is this in my state, right? Which one of these three things do my state allow? Because each state allows something different, right? So when Lantern operates up in Massachusetts and Michigan, you're allowed to get a tech platform, but you're not allowed to carry out deliveries, right? So you'll need to partner with a courier service or operators, what the professional term is. But I like to say ice cream model because, you know, the ice cream truck ride around. He just going in the freezer. He just going in the freezer. He got you. So tech services have to partner with either A or B, but courier services have to partner with the dispensary. Ice cream truck models get to do whatever. The only thing they need is a viable inventory source from a cultivator and a manufacturer, and they're good to go. So that's what we're seeing that license starting to come into play in states like Massachusetts. Because the courier model has just been deemed so inviolable. And if dispensaries would have just be like, nah, we don't want to work with you, then it's just like you're devalued a whole license. You know what I'm saying? Dispensaries are also allowed to deliver their whole product. So there's a whole fight that goes into that. But so we're talking about along the lines of what did I teach them for delivery and what to expect, what problems can we see? Those are some of the things I was trying to have the people in the cohort aware of when they're getting involved in cannabis delivery, what it will look like developing their business models, and what should they be expecting per delivery to be profitable, because that's how you got to think about it. You shouldn't think about it on a big scale. You need to think about it per delivery, and I need to make this much per delivery or we're not going to be profitable, straight like that.
Makes sense.
And can I just say, I would love to live in a world one day where, like, cannabis ice cream trucks do exist. With a little, like, jingle playing, but you're getting, like, a...
Oh.
Does that not exist in California?
The model specifically, probably now. But that's because everyone's been fighting and advocating for so many different things. So... But Massachusetts, I know Massachusetts is on the way. It's called the operator license.
Ooh.
Interesting.
Might have to relocate there, Alexis.
I don't mind it.
Are you guys both located in Illinois right now?
Well, we're both in New York.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. So we're waiting for the good stuff to come any day now.
Slowly but surely.
Well, speaking of adult use sales, New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy this week just announced that rec sales will likely start as soon as March. How has your team prepared for, you know, the forthcoming adult use market? I know your team really only delivers CBD right now. And what has this licensing and regulatory process been like so far?
You got time?
We do.
All right. So first, while Phil Murphy announced that the CRC announced Thursday or Tuesday or Thursday that probably was a little premature.
Classic.
So we're still waiting to see what that adult use sales market will actually be like. And then again, the stores that are actually medical stores right now are going to be the ones who get that first chunk at the recreational market. They're the ones who have to show that they can still provide proper care for patients, as well as being able to support a strong standing recreational market too. So with the delay has been in New Jersey, at least right now, at least what they're trying to say, they're trying to make sure we're clear with, is that the medical patients aren't going to be phased out by the opening of the recreational market, and that all the current operators will be able to support both. So until operators are able to prove that they can support both, I think we're still a little bit ways away from that. How our team is preparing for that, we still have to prepare for the licensing round, right? So adult use dispensary licenses don't go out till March 15th, right? We just had adult use cultivator licenses released on December 15th. And we're still waiting for the date of the logistical licenses of delivery, wholesale, and distribution. So just trying our best to just stay with our ear to the wire as much as we can, because it really feels like this is a really big, long waiting game right now. There's but so much preparation we can do without knowing what they want on the application specifically. There's but so many older applications that we can go and sit through and sort through. Like, you don't want to write out a whole old application when you still have your new ones coming through. So just trying to make sure, at least to the best detail of what we're expecting to see, we got our SOPs in order, and all of the little guidelines that is going to go into the application. Now we're just really just trying to have patience on when the full application comes out, so we can go out and just deliver and execute a strong application. And then just trying to help other people get ready for the processes that they have to. One of your questions earlier was how do we continue? How do we expect new ways to continue to pay it forward? Like I've been emphasizing this whole time, education is really, really big to me. And doing these applications is going to be a challenge for a lot of people. There's so much that goes into it. There's so much referring back to the laws that go into it. So also just trying to help other companies understand what they're getting into when it comes to this regulatory process as we wait for our process to open up. So yeah, it's been long. It's been really long.
Whew. So we're kind of maybe at the final stretch, maybe?
Hopefully. Let's okay. say hopefully. Fingers crossed, right? So granted, we know, like I said, we know the recreational licenses come out the 15th of this month, and we're just going to keep our fingers crossed on when the logistical licenses will be out.
Sweet. All right. Fingers crossed, toes crossed. And we know that New Jersey is a limited license state, which we know often creates even higher barriers to entry for business owners without access to capital. What other ancillary businesses do you believe will be high in demand in New Jersey when adult use takes off?
Ooh, ancillary businesses. That's going to be, I know for a fact, there's going to be a lot of marketing opportunities that come into the fold, because you have to get some type of recognition for the cannabis industry here in Jersey, right? It's still a big, what is it? So I know marketing opportunities are going to be something huge. Security is the next thing that's an ancillary service without being an ancillary service. But security jobs, being the company that has to sit with the bulk transfers, or being the company that has to sit at store, the dispensary, that's something that's going to be real major. Security.
Didn't think about that. Okay.
Yeah, security is huge.
Chelsea, me and you can do security.
Yeah. I, as a 5'2 person, can probably find a job.
Hey, it's always the little ones.
Yeah, I can go for the knees. Yeah, that's right.
So security is going to be big. And then also application writing is going to be big.
Oh, okay.
Application writing is going to be major. So consulting, I guess that would be along the line of consulting. Those are the three big ones for me: security, marketing, and application writing, because those are the three things necessary for an application right now. How do you plan to package your products that comply with the state rules, right? You're going to need your marketing company to help you create state-friendly guidelines, packaging and stuff like that. Your application writer is going to write that for you, how you guys plan to package that and stuff. It's just so much that goes into it. And then your security plan is that's natural. You got to understand that, how are you going to protect your products? How are you going to protect your drivers? How are you going to protect your facility? So that's very natural. But those are some of the big things I think that's going to, like, you got a security company, especially a security company. You got a security company, you about to go up. Security is about to be it. You got to a security company because it's and it ain't no overhead. All you really need is a bunch of people with SORUS licenses. Mm-hmm. Send them out from your headquarters, your dispatch quarters could be your room for a security company. So security is to be big. Security is big. Retired police, they got them something with that one.
That's true. I see a guard in every dispensary, at least
once. Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for all our listeners, like, who want to, you know, be in the space but not plant touching, this is something you all need to consider. What are the different ancillary businesses that you can tie yourself to? And you heard it from Tyon. He said security is going to be a big one. So thank Tyon for this free advice. Okay. Mm-hmm. This would usually cost a lot of money, guys.
Security.
So a lot is going to change in New Jersey over the next few years, and you have been an early mover and you've built out a lot of the tech infrastructure that hopefully will take off once adult use starts. So what do you hope New Jersey's cannabis industry will look like in the next 2 to 5 years?
I hope this is the center of the cannabis industry, not just New Jersey, but I meant that New Jersey, New York, Pennsylvania, like the northeastern region. My direct deal is that the actual cannabis industry is about to shift from the West Coast to the East Coast, just like every other industry does. Mm-hmm. A lot of people on the West Coast be trying to say, like, all of the money and stuff is here and blah blah blah, we're making this and that. And my answer is always because we're not open. More people live here.
Right.
More people live here. More lawmakers live here, more influence lives here. So once it gets thriving, New Jersey, New York, especially New York, I mean, granted, mm-hmm. they run the media and stuff like that, you'll see it start to expand and get more access throughout the rest of the country. Because New York media is the only media that gets throughout the whole state, throughout the whole country, right? So as their experience goes, good or bad, it's going to be how the national experience goes, good or bad. And that's something I thoroughly believe. So with that, I'm expecting really great things from both our states, and to the point where I believe that the cannabis industry is about to shift to here. Mm-hmm. And then once it starts to open up, and how I think it's going to open up, we have the ports. So there it goes.
Very true.
Very true.
Yeah. No, this is the beginning, right? Like if once Northeast is fully on board, then, you know, obviously I feel like federal legalization might be right around the corner. It'll be closer than we think. So good thoughts. All right. So we are done with the serious part of the interview. It's time for the fun part. Too bad I don't have a joint. I can smoke right now as I'm asking you these questions. But this is what we call I Got Five on It, where we ask you 5 rapid fire questions and you just, you know, top off your head, but you let us know. First question. If you could infuse cannabis into any food or drink, what would it be?
Cool Ranch Doritos.
Ooh, I haven't even had Cool Ranch Doritos since I was a kid, but damn, that's a good one.
Wait, can I say that that already exists? I went to an event in LA and they had infused Cool Ranch tortilla chips.
I need it.
What? Again, California is living in the year like 2050 and New York is just ass backward.
I need it. I need that. I love Cool Ranch Doritos. So Cool Ranch Doritos that get me high would be amazing.
Look, you just made me need it.
Yeah.
And I didn't even know I needed it. Oh my God. Okay.
All right.
Beautiful. Let me bring it back. All right.
What is your ideal setting to enjoy cannabis?
Oh, this is going to sound so corny, but my gamer chair with my headset on.
Oh, so precious.
Video games is my favorite place to smoke. Like, if I can play games, like just sit there and play the game with my headset and just smoke in such a comfortable setting, it's just, that's my ideal. Like, I'm relaxed.
What are you playing?
Warzone. Warzone all day. Call of Duty Warzone, maybe some 2K, maybe some Madden, but definitely Call of Duty Warzone.
Very intense game. All right.
I know. I feel like I would be a little paranoid.
I was going to say like Mario Kart, something like chill. All right.
No. That's funny. Okay, cool. Next question. What is your biggest cannabis related pet peeve? For instance, when smoking with others and one messes up the rotation.
I got a few. I hate when people don't use rolling trays because, like, I have a million rolling trays in here. Don't roll up on nothing. Don't roll up on no. I don't want you to use paper. Okay. Don't use that. Yo, use a rolling tray. Don't break it down on my desk. Don't break it down on my dresser.
All right.
It's a million rolling trays in here. Use a rolling tray.
I feel that.
All don't right. take my lighter.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
You know that's not your lighter.
Just bad etiquette.
It's bad. Yeah. Rude.
Unless I really like you, like you're my peoples, don't try to join the site without your own J to contribute to the site.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. I didn't think about that one.
Don't think we about to just be sitting here and smoking my one blunt. Like, no, this is my blunt. I'm about to grown. You should have your own blunt. And that's what a cipher is. A cipher is just me and you sharing a spliff. Like, you're not one of my best friends, like somebody I'm with all the time. We're just going to smoke right quick during work. Like, we got 10 minutes. Of course, we're about to share a J. We don't got to smoke two of them. But, like, don't think we about to. The idea was to us to just sit down and smoke. Don't come to that without your own. Right?
You got
to
contribute to the greater good.
Yeah, BYOB.
I do hate when somebody messes up the rotation. So, I mean, we pass to the left. So we just really just sit down. Don't do that. Just pass it to the left. It's all good.
Counterclockwise.
And outside of that, I think those are just the really big ones for me. Don't take my lighter and use a roller tray.
Love that. Those are good.
Hard to live by. If you could smoke with any celebrity, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
I could call you too.
Yeah.
All right. So dead. I want to smoke with Martin Luther King.
Oh,
that's a first on high priority. Okay. He said, I want to get my civil rights action on. Okay.
A fun fact about me is the only poster I have on my wall is the I Have a Dream speech.
Wow.
Nice.
Like I said, I really enjoy politics and stuff like that, like those older orders. But I, as much as I agree with Dr. King, I question it too. I want to know why he did some of the things so nice. Like, I want to show him some of what I feel is like the ramifications of how he moved too. So it's like I want to have a really in-depth conversation. Like, I don't want him to feel like he's like alive or anything like that. I want to be like, nah, look, yo, why did you do this? Because this is what happened from that, and this is what that happened. Why did you stop people from acting like this? Because when y'all were doing this, look what happened. And then we stopped, and then look what happened. You know what I mean? We lost the grip on this. We kept a grip on, like, so it's a bunch of giving back and forth I would like to have with Dr. King. He's one of my favorite people. So I think that would be a really intense conversation. He would have to, he probably wouldn't smoke in the beginning of it, but he would have to hit the J after some of those questions I planned on asking. So definitely Dr. King dead.
And before you go to a lot, the follow-up question is Malcolm invited to the cypher?
Oh, I love Malcolm. I don't question Malcolm. That's why I don't need to talk to him.
I see. All right.
I don't question him. I don't question his methods. Everything he did to me makes sense.
You understood. Okay.
Everything he did to me makes sense. Everything he did had an action and a reaction. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Some of the things that the King did to me personally, they had an action and they lacked the reaction, right? A proper reaction. Gotcha. Like, how are you telling people they can't be angry and upset? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, how are you, like, these are, I get the boycott was great. I wish we would have kept doing things like that. Like, but then once integration came back, right? We were just doing great as Black businesses. And now you're telling these people, go use white people products and go back to using this and that. And now the value of the dollar is no longer circulating in the city. It's going back to where it was going. And exactly what your the point you set out to prove, you proved it. And then what?
Got you. Okay. I see. I get you.
So it's like, you showed them that, yeah, we got this. And then it was like, all right, we don't got to have it no more, God. They're going to be nice to us now. Like, no, they did not.
Right. You have some questions. Totally understand.
Yeah.
And then you said the person that's alive would be?
Oh, yeah. So my person alive to smoke a J with would be Neil deGrasse.
Ooh. Interesting. That's a first, too.
Yeah.
You guys gonna go to a planetarium and just
and just
vibe out?
Just teach me, bro. But I love the way Neil deGrasse thinks. I'm not the best at science, so he helped me a lot to like really understand some of the nuances of the thing that's really going on. To help understand the complexities of what's going on. And the atmosphere, the stratosphere on a nuclear level. His ideas are wild as shit sometimes. It's like hearing him, he just seems like the perfect person to be in the cypher with. So
Grass
is definitely that for me.
That's what's up. All right. And our last I Got Five question. What's your go-to high snack?
I'm not even going to lie. Cheese Doodles Puffs.
Okay.
Cheese Doodles Puff, the Wise brand. The one
specifically.
The one.
Okay. All right. I'm not mad at that.
Yeah. Doesn't it make your cotton mouth worse?
I don't know. I could eat a whole like big bag in like 3 minutes.
Oof, I'm just thinking about the calories.
It don't count when you smile.
Yeah, I'll say that to myself the next time.
Before we go, do y'all mind if I could ask y'all both I got five on the questions. So do you mind if we could run this back for YouTube?
Yeah.
All right, so the first question on I Got Five on it is, if you can infuse any infuse cannabis into any food or drink, what would it be? I guess Alexis will go first.
Ooh. Wow, it's so funny. Like, I ask these questions and I don't think about the questions for myself. I am a huge margarita and Cosmo girl. So I'm going to say, yeah, margarita and Cosmos.
Wow, that's intense. You're going to be...
Oh, yeah. Litty, and that's okay.
That's good. How about you, Chelsea?
Oh, man. When I'm high, I love like wet, cold things. So like infused ice cream would be great, or like a sorbet. I'm looking for that.
Gotcha. That's why you were so interested in the ice cream truck.
I actually know somebody who makes ice cream. I just told her she has to get her brand better because people are not going to want to buy it. I know somebody that's working on it. It's really good too, but like again, presentation matters on a
that's big true.
Because I know they make boozy ice cream now, but it's just like you got to eat a lot of ice cream to get drunk. I'm not into that, but you know, sorbet, you can concentrate it. Not about
that's okay. A good one.
What is your ideal setting to enjoy cannabis?
For me, like I love to travel and I love to travel to warm places. So a beach, like that's okay. The ideal. Like, obviously, like I can't go to a beach every day, but in my mind, like the beach smoking a J with a margarita in the other hand, ideal.
Oh, you vibing.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
It's vibing out. How about you, Chelsea?
I'm going to have to go a similar route with Alexis. Actually, my best high experience ever was when I was in Mexico and I took an edible and we were like on a boat and I jumped on to like a floaty or something and I was just floating in the ocean like high as a kite, like true bliss, what I believe heaven feels like. So I would like to recreate that feeling.
That sounds like a good feeling right there. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what is your biggest cannabis related pet peeve?
I think for me, it probably has to go back to what you said, like random folks coming in and just like smoking like everyone's weed. I'm like, I don't know you. I don't know where your lips were earlier in the morning, last night. Like, I don't like smoking with random people. I need to feel comfortable with you. And if I am going to smoke with a random person, like you said, you need to have your own stuff. Right. We're not sharing.
We're not sharing. How about you?
I just hate like a poorly ventilated space.
That sounds like such a Chelsea answer.
That's so, you talk about me being specific.
Okay, it's because it's my own pet peeve because I live in a studio apartment and even when I smoke outside my window, my entire apartment, like there is nothing I can do to, and it just, it annoys me so much. Okay. I gotta make more money and move.
For ventilation is her answer.
Chelsea to the HVAC department.
Yeah, my building's old. I can't even get a proper like ventilation thing. It's just windows and fans. It's sad.
New York, New York.
What borough do you live in?
Hell's Kitchen.
In English, please?
Midtown West.
Manhattan, okay.
Manhattan. He was like, what? ¿Qué pasó? That was hilarious.
I thought you know I ain't from New York, man.
Jersey, but, straight up through.
Straight up. If you could smoke with any celeb, dead, I'm going to say and alive because I did both. And alive, who would it be and why?
Okay, so if we're talking about dead, I would have to say Whitney Houston. I just feel like she would be a lot of fun and she would spill a lot of tea. And she would just, you know, talk about all her crazy relationships that she's had. And I would like to pick her brain about what was it about Ray J that she found so alluring. And then alive, I would have to say Rihanna because she's my favorite and like who wouldn't want to smoke with Rihanna? So
Alexis is going to meet Rihanna one day.
I'm putting it out there right now. I'm meeting Rihanna.
Okay, I believe you. I believe you. You just manifest. Yeah,
if you want it enough, it will happen.
It will happen.
All right. And what about you, Chelsea?
I think you'll understand where my peculiarities come from, but it's going to be Larry David.
I could see that.
He is like my spirit person. I feel like he would benefit first from smoking a J because everything annoys him and he sees problems with everything. But I just want to unpack where all of his like insecurities and issues come from. And I just want to shit on a lot of things with him.
You don't think Larry David smokes?
I don't know. He's old. He
Be
seems like
surprised.
kind of a swinger. If he does, I'm gonna find him. I'll hit him. I know his daughter smokes a lot because I follow her on Instagram. But I don't know about.
I'm pretty sure she's. He probably hits a J every once in a while.
I feel that too. Yeah.
Yeah. He's chill out. I don't have a dead person I really want to talk to, because mostly my knowledge of celebrities is not great.
Okay. All right. And then lastly, what is your guys' go-to high snack?
For me, I am Southsider from Chicago through and through. So this is a very Southside Chicago answer for all my Chicago listeners. Definitely not. That's a very tourist answer. No, bam, wrong. For my Southsiders, it is Flamin' Hots with cheese.
What's
yes.
That?
What is
you know,
that?
Like the Flamin' Hot chips, the Cheetos?
Flamin' Hot Cheetos with cheese?
With cheese, yes.
Like dip?
Yes, the queso cheese on it. That is a very, like Southside thing.
Like the Tostitos jar of, like, orange.
Well, we kind of use a slightly different version of that, but
okay.
You pour it on the Flamin' Hot, and then if you really want to get fancy, you put jalapenos in it.
Okay.
Ooh.
All right.
It's a whole vibe.
Don't buy chips in Chicago. Got it.
Don't knock it until you try it.
No, you know what? And I'm really that type of person. I would definitely try it.
It's like life changing. It really is. I promise.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Chelsea?
Like I said, I get really bad cotton mouth anytime I get high. So it's frozen grapes.
Oh, yeah.
It's such a nerd snack, but like it always hits the spot. It like has different textures when you're high, and it just like feels so good. Like, you know, when your mouth is like really dry and like.
Green or purple?
Green. Oh, my God. I hate purple grapes.
Same.
Yeah. Green grapes all the way.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining me on my podcast.
I just took over the high priority. Let me just give him the mic. Here you go. It is yours.
This is Frank signing off from High Priority. Today, my guests was Alexis Isaacs and Chelsea Way. We got to experience how they started.
This is a high priority first, you guys. This has never happened, but I'm so happy. This is great. Well, before we actually sign off, Tyon, can you let us know where we can find you and Roll Up Life? Like, how can we get in contact with you?
Absolutely. So I'm really simple. I'm the simplest person ever. All of my social media is at Tyon. And Roll Up Life, Instagram is rollup.life, and Twitter is Roll Up Life Inc.
Boom. That's it.
That's
Thanks,
it.
Tyon.
Thanks again for listening to High Priority. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Special thanks to Antoine Dry, Donald Edwards, and Jim Pryor from Dirty Soap Entertainment for our intro music. To learn more about our show and parent company, Matteo Communications, head on over to our website at matteo.com. That's MATTIO.com.